Hello there, and welcome to Star Wars Music Minute, where we celebrate Star Wars through music and sound. This season, we're making our way through The Last Jedi 5 minutes at a time, exploring the score, sound design, and how all the sonic elements contribute to the storytelling as a whole. I'm Chrisanthi Tan, a composer and massive Star Wars fan, and my goal for the show is to guide a musical discovery process that everyone can participate in, no matter your experience or training. Today, I'm joined by Anthony Hansen, who voiced Luke Skywalker in the first Star Wars Battlefront game, and we're diving into minutes 36 through 40 of The Last Jedi, which starts with Luke saying he will train Rey, takes us to Vice Admiral Holdo's promotion, and ends with Rose just realizing that Finn is trying to escape. Hey, Anthony.
Hello.
I'm very excited to have you.
Well, thank you for having me.
This is... I'm really excited to talk about the stuff we're going to talk about today, because when we think about the sound and music of Star Wars, it's easy to overlook one of the biggest elements of it, which is the vocal performances, which is literally the things that actors are saying. I mean, we kind of skip over that, sort of like, oh, that's dialogue. That's like acting, or like, you know, whatever. And then we think about the music and sound that's around that, but that in itself is so much goes into creating, getting what you can from the human voice. There's so much that goes into it, as you would know.
Just like looking over these 5 minutes, there's an interesting kind of, I don't want to say juggling going on, but yeah, from a vocal performance, kind of, is this going to be a quiet, you know, is Luke going to startle her awake as he's standing over her? Or is he just going to let her wake up? You know, it's like, all right, time to go.
You mean when he's saying, like, you mean yeah, when Rey's sleeping and he's like, I'll train you.
Yeah. I mean, he could have just yelled the heck out of something and gotten her up. And it's like, first lesson, something weird. But that acting choice would have then, I think, governed the music, because you're not going to want this quiet kind of serene sound with a drill sergeant yelling in your ear. That makes sense.
That's true. Well, and the action that precedes it is, well, Rey, she's sleeping. So it would be very jarring to have a boisterously loud entrance from Luke, I suppose. The music that's happening right there is Rey's theme, but just briefly. It's just like the very first like half phrase. It's like dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee, and it doesn't go any further. So the front and center really is Luke's voice. And I find that in a lot of the Luke scenes in this movie, that is the case, where the music sort of almost stops or goes to a really quiet, you know, has a quiet moment where you can really hear Luke's voice cutting through. Have you noticed that?
Not consciously.
It's sort of like it's protected. Not protected, but like revered as a separate thing with gravitas.
Yeah.
I think.
When he speaks, everyone else is silent.
Yeah. And I wonder if, well, I'm going to just go for it. I mean, you voiced Luke in a video game. In Battlefront. And obviously voicing a character as part of a video game would be pretty different from how you would do it in a film, right?
Yes. Most voiceover acting is tends to be a lot broader. Like, the camera can hear your thoughts. So, it's a different skill set, acting on camera, acting behind the mic, as Mark Hamill definitely knows. So something that I would do behind the mic, especially on a game like Battlefront, especially on games where you're on a battlefield, it is almost screaming for 4 hours. We usually do 2 to 4 hours max. A max session is going to be 4 hours, just because that's all your voice can take.
I'm surprised it's even that long, considering. I've heard your clips, and it's like you're yelling over like battle.
Yeah. If it's really intense, they'll usually do 2 hours, because at that point, you know, you're basically, you sound like this, you got no voice, and you've probably done a little bit of damage, which needs time to heal.
Yeah.
I kind of liken it to, it's acting on camera, or even acting just normally in voiceover, is acting with a scalpel. Doing Battlefront type games is acting with a sledgehammer. You're on, you're screaming, and you're getting notes from the director saying, okay, we're losing the Luke sound. And so it's a lot of juggling because, yeah, you're, the higher your volume, the more you're screaming, at least for me, the less control I have over the muscles. That's why it's like that sledgehammer. You're just, it's a wild swing. And then I have to remember, oh, wait, I have to get back to Luke. I have to make it sound like Luke. So that was a big challenge that I had to work with when recording that game.
Wow. Okay. I have a lot of follow-up questions that tie into this movie too. I mean, mainly because there are so many voices of Luke, not only between all the actors, but I mean, like, Mark Hamill's own voice has changed over the years. And it's something that we can all hear, but can you help us understand what in his vocal instrument has changed? Not just him, but like anyone. And so you as an actor, if you're asked to do Luke and they're like, do old Luke versus new Luke or young Luke, what would you alter in your own technique to achieve those results?
I would, well, young Luke is, even like my vocal cords have, vocal cords age, and with everything, as it ages, it takes on certain characteristics, especially if you've done really gruff. Like Mark Hamill, he has a texture in his voice. I have a texture in my voice, just naturally. And as we perform, depending on what we perform, that may be emphasized or, put another way, it kind of, you start down a path. You literally kind of start down the path.
Are you talking about like the gravel in his voice?
The gravel in his voice is something I think just from nature, age, and doing the types of role that he's taken on. You look at the Joker, and the Joker's a very gravelly voice. And I think just doing that over the years, that placement becomes more natural. The gravel takes on its own effect. So you've got kind of older, I'm not going to do a really bad old Luke, but old Luke is going to be a little bit more grizzly, a little bit more gravelly.
How are you getting that sound? Are you squeezing your throat a little bit?
I am specifically, let's see. If I do that, it's nasal placement, but it's back here. So I'm squeezing this and pushing it out my nose, if that makes sense.
Whoa.
So, versus if I did something back here where I'm kind of forcing it into my chest.
It's more hollow.
It's the same squeezing back here, but I'm just kind of doing this thing right here. See, I'm taking it back and forth. But that gravel is still there. That it's like you learning to play an instrument is me doing the same exact thing. I've learned to play my instrument. My instrument just happens to be my vocal cords.
Right. Yeah. I find voices so interesting. I mean, people who are close to me know that I've been on my own vocal journey for the past couple years as well, trying to reattune myself to where my vocal placement is and to where it is most natural for me to speak, because I was running into some issues, and it makes me think a lot about, like, I can feel like when I try to talk gravelly, it really hurts. And it's hard to exit that zone. If you know what I mean. Like, once I start talking down there, it's like almost hard to get back to my normal voice. Like, if I try to really do this, then it's like, oh, okay. I need to stretch or something.
Yeah. Oh, it's exactly that. It's like, I mean, medically speaking, probably not accurate, but it's kind of like getting a Charlie horse in your vocal cords. You're using that one area that you're not used to, and it cramps up. You're like, ah! And it can do damage. That's Vocal health is one of the chief things that we have to focus on. I mean, it's my moneymaker.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, it's great screaming. It's very cathartic. I will say that. War games are fantastic because you're just, you get it all out. But at the end of the day, yeah, it's like if I've done permanent damage, then the work that's going to come my way is going to reflect that. So I'm not going to be going out for young Luke now, I think, just because I know my voice has dropped due to just age and use. So it'd be a real challenge for me to do that same audition and book it.
Has the pitch of your voice dropped, or is it more like the frequencies are more represented in the lower end now?
I would say probably the latter, and the texture, the natural texture that I have, has grown. Definitely grown. I mean, I definitely have a richer voice, I think, now than I did 5-6 years ago.
Right. Okay. So when considering, like, so when we look at these actors in Star Wars, or, you know, whether they're on screen or, you know, under some suit, or, you know, whether you see their face or not, you know, like Andy Serkis is a big example.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think they are manipulating in their own voice versus is in post-production, is in mixing? And you can you can call specific, like, yeah, you can talk about Andy Serkis.
I mean, Andy Serkis is doing, he's, as far as I know, there's no post. Gollum is one of those characters that it's, the placement is relatively easy. At least I know, like, people I've spoken with that can do Gollum. It's basically, I mean, it's Stitch.
Gollum is easy?
And Stitch. Gollum is his rancor. Gollum, no. I mean, if you want to do this, I can do the entire interview as Stitch or Gollum. They're basically the same kind of, it's the same placement. And then yeah. You just adjust the performance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the whole thing with voice acting is, and especially if you get into, like, I can talk hours about accents, dialect work, and all that stuff. Finding the placement of a character for me in my voice lends to how the performance is. Bob Bergen, the voice of Porky Pig, likes to say, do the performance and the voice will follow. So yeah, that's another thing. It's like, when we're performing, we're not just like, oh, I'm doing a performance now. The voice is not going to, you have to be as animated as the character you're performing, which is another way that, like, I know for me, the transition from voiceover to on camera is a challenge because I like to be big. I've got a theatrical background. I'm playing to the back of the audience. So bringing it in small, I'll end up losing stuff. I feel like I'm going off on a tangent.
That's all right. I'll reel you back in. But what you mean is you like off camera.
I love off camera.
Yeah.
I love the voiceover world. Yeah.
Which Star Wars vocal performances stand out to you in a good way or in an interesting way or something that you think would be interesting to call attention to for us to notice?
I would like there to be a discussion and almost a decision on Chewbacca.
Oh, say more.
Well, okay. Whenever I see somebody do Chewbacca, and it's, for me, there are two ways I hear Chewbacca. There are the ways people perform Chewbacca, which is kind of the, and then there's the way I hear it, which is more of a, that makes any sense.
Yeah, those are very familiar sounds, but I don't follow where the distinction is.
I just find it fascinating that people kind of latch on to like what they hear.
Yeah,
and then they replicate what they hear. And I think the true Chewbacca is a hybrid of all of that.
For sure. Do you think in the movies Sometimes they skew more toward one sound than another.
I don't know, because I like, that's one thing I've never seen. We know James Earl Jones does Darth Vader, Frank Oz, Yoda. Who performed Chewbacca? Like, was that a post-production type of thing? Vocally speaking, oh. I never actually bothered to research. I just took it at face value that Chewbacca was Chewbacca. But I don't know how much of that was ADR or post-production.
That's a really good point, because I know that ADR and post-production are a big part of it. But I don't know if they're like layering it on top of any sort of thing. I think, though, that the actors inside are just doing a physical performance. Pretty sure.
That tracks. But it's just, I don't know. Chewbacca is one of those that just sticks out to me as a vocal performance.
That's interesting. I think what you said has been a through line in almost every episode of the show, which is like, everyone's primed to pick up on a different thing and latch onto that thing as the thing, as the defining thing of that thing. So Chewbacca has such a wide variety of emotion.
Mm-hmm. Considering that he never utters a word, so to speak. I mean, that in itself is a fantastic performance challenge. It's like, yeah. Okay, here's a guy who basically has to do creature effects for all of the films, and it's so nuanced that you know exactly what he's conveying.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever watch films that you were involved in, either as a voiceover artist or that you know people who have been, and then been surprised by hearing how that sounds in the full mix of the movie? I'll try to see if I can articulate that better. Like when there's music on top of it, or when there's other sounds interacting with it, do you know when you are going in to record what is going to be surrounding you?
Most of the time, no. Because especially with animation and video games, it's all done. I mean, ADR, dubbing, like anime dubbing, stuff like that, absolutely, because you're seeing it, you're acting to picture. So you're getting the full picture and you're just kind of overlaying stuff. But for animation, video games, most of the time, you don't know what's going on because it may not have been created yet. Sometimes the director will, like the director might throw in some background noise just for theming, to get you kind of into the headspace of it.
When you're acting to picture, do you act to picture even when the character is, you know how sometimes the animated character or even like green screen or whatever, an alien or something, really matches, like it really seems to match the actor's mouth. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, think about Robin Williams' Genie performance. Like that is so his face and like, the way he is moving his mouth. Is that also acted to picture, or is there animation that happens after?
I mean, there are probably pickups after the fact, but with animation, they probably recorded his performances, and then the animators drew to that to match. Disney did this a lot. They actually they'll have dancers come in and perform the routine, and then they'll draw that. Same with the performance. If it's big and loud and they're doing this weird thing with their hands and their face, that's the character. I would say the animator's job is then to transfer that to the character in drawing. But they definitely use it as a reference point. So they'll have the actor's performance to draw upon versus the other way around.
Makes sense. Wow, it's such an intricate process. Like, I guess just like with the musical aspects, some will have happened before and some will happen after, but it's kind of this delicate dance of like one has to be based on the other, but then they both have to be able to adjust to the other if need be.
It's Schrodinger's film. The music has to exist for the performance, but the performance has to exist for the music. But which one comes first?
Yeah, I
get what you're saying.
So something that happens in this scene that I think is interesting, and I definitely did not notice it when I was in theaters. I didn't start noticing it until really doing the show and like concentrating on 5 minutes at a time. It's when we are traveling through we're traveling through space on the Radis, and it just sounds like you're in an airplane. Like it sounds, you hear like turbulence and you hear this, I don't know, like white noise type stuff mm-hmm. happening. And when I watched The Last Jedi director's commentary version, Rian Johnson says, let me see if I took this quote down. Basically, he says that traveling through space is really hard. It's hard to communicate huge ships moving very fast without undercutting their mass or without having a reference point to look at. So like I think when we're looking out the window, that's a kind of a reference point. So that's one way. But in this, you're like just in a room, like and they're filming in a room. They're obviously not traveling through space. So how do you convey that they're not just in a meeting in a boardroom on a planet, mm-hmm. but they're really moving? And you have to have like, even though the vocal performances, like the acting in this context, like they're giving speeches and stuff, that has to be front and center, but then there has to be this believable ambiance behind them. So I guess I just wanted to point that out as like my, the thing I'm really interested in with regards to sound is like how it contributes to the world building and how it makes things believable or not believable.
That's sound design. I noticed it watching the clip. It also, I mean, there are certain elements in when Finn comes on. They're having their back and forth. Rose and he are having their back and forth. As he's going to the pod, the sound designer actually, one of the mechanical noises was just kind of a heartbeat. And it wasn't like a doop, 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 but it was just a like one mechanical thing going off, but it was done so quickly. And I realized, oh, wow, this is there to ratchet up tension. So you've got the natural background of the ship, and then you've got this like pulsing, and it's at just the right rhythm for me where I was like, oh, something's happening.
Interesting. And you're talking about, you're saying it's a mechanical sound, like it's maybe the sound of an escape pod or something? Or
yeah, it was just one of those kind of background noises that you, like the ship, like the gentle hum of the ship, you may not necessarily process it
straight
consciously.
Up, I didn't notice that. I don't actually, yeah. I'm going to have to go back and note, because in that part, all I'm noticing is the music. It's like this tiptoeing pizzicato mm-hmm. thing. And so that's where my ear gets distracted. So, I love that. I didn't notice that.
That's, yeah, because I watched it a few times and I'm like, okay, the music's bouncing back. I love how the music bounces back and forth to that, like he's skulking, and then it cuts to Rose and she's got kind of her own hero theme. And yeah, when she's talking about her sister and I couldn't tell you what instrument it is. I'm guessing a wind instrument.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very kind of airy and hero-y, and then she pulls out the taser. And it drops, and I'm just like, ah! It's weird. Watching this, watching the movie again through a different filter gives it a very different feel. You start looking at different things, listening to different things, and experiencing. I would not have noticed all the little things, like the pulsing in the background, were it not for this, honestly.
Are there any other things that you noticed this time around with this new lens?
When Holdo's giving her speech, I feel like there it starts off with the original Star Wars theme, like the first couple of notes, and then goes into the Resistance theme.
Something like that. I love that moment. Okay. Oh, I wanted to talk about that part too. So we might as well. I'm so glad that you noticed it though, because again, I may have noticed it in the theater. I just don't remember. But I just clearly, when I saw it again recently, I was like, wow, how are people not talking about this more? So yeah, we do get something that sounds like the Force theme, which I think is interesting because there's a lot of talk about what Holdo's deal is. And there has been some, more than a little bit of speculation that Holdo herself is Force sensitive. And Leia met her when she was, like, they met when they were very young on Alderaan, which is discussed in Claudia Gray's book. But yeah, we do totally get a hint of the Force theme. But one note is changed. So I'll play a sample.
Yeah.
So instead of going, it does.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes down. And it's the rest of the theme plays out too. So it's not just like an accident.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it does the full thing and then it repeats again, doing the same thing. It's like a very, I think, obvious reference to the Force theme, but slight alteration. And I don't know what that alteration means. And I'm sure that's just something that we can intuit whatever it means to us. But I think that's, I think it's really cool.
I mean, that's the beauty of, like, I mean, this, we interpret our kind of own, like you, the book you mentioned. Yeah, there is the possibility of the Force, or it could be just as simple as John Williams wanting to bring in something familiar before adding in that new element. It's like, here is old meeting new.
Yep. Both could be valid interpretations. Yeah. It could even be, because this is when she's talking about the spark and bring the galaxy, like the rebellion and whatever. It could also just be a recall to A New Hope and to, you know, even if it's not like she, Holdo, is Force sensitive, the rebellion, the leaders involved in it, and even just Leia as a symbol of the rebellion, the Force is, you know, connected to everything. It's life. The Force is life. So it doesn't necessarily have to mean like you are a gifted Force wielder. It could just be like, and now let's all like gather hands because the Force is all around us, and the rebellion, you know, it could just mean so many. It could mean so many broad or specific things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that you noticed that, though. I wonder how many people, like, listen to that and recognize it, but just think something is a little bit off in a good way. I love when that happens, like when something's off, but in an interesting way that makes me think.
Well, I think, yeah, it's, I mean, we've listened to, I know myself, I'm assuming you as well, have listened to the music a lot over the years.
Oh, yeah.
A lot. So, yeah, our brains are going to be wired to notice that difference. We're going to recognize three notes.
Yeah. And also to that end, we've listened to these themes. Like, a lot of us have listened to this music so much that we almost forget what they're attached to thematically because they're just a part of us. So it's not like in our mind we're like, and that maps out to the resistance march, and that maps out to such and such second, like that maps out to Han and Leia, that maps out to, like, we just know it's familiar and feels like family, and it's one of those, can't remember if it's my cousin or my aunt, but like you know, it kind of takes a while for us to like pinpoint where else have I heard that, oh yeah, in that spot. Okay, so I love that intuition.
And now I kind of want to give my cousin and my aunt their own themes.
The other theme that we get here is the brief introduction to Rose's theme. We don't hear much of it we just, when she's looking down at the medallion, at her sister's medallion, we get a little hint of it, and it's... What do you think about that? Not necessarily like whether you like it or not, but like, what does it sound like to you?
The first word followed by the second word is would be hope and forlorn. So forlorn hope.
Oh, interesting.
If we want to play that game, I would say, yeah, I'm like, oh, it sounds like hope, but yeah, but there's a sadness, obviously, because her sister. But yeah, there's just a, maybe it's the key it's in. There's something about it where it's, you can tell I'm not a music person, but bear with
me a
second.
No, your intuition is interesting.
There's something to it that's, it's like, I want to feel good, but there's a subtext of sadness. Which, again, hope forlorn.
Interesting. I definitely got the hope part. And I do distinctly remember hearing this theme in the theaters. Like, in the theaters, this is, like, one of the things I walked away from being like, well, that was a distinctly new theme. And it was everywhere. It's, like, it's in many places in this movie. And so, I mean, I'll get more into it in future episodes because it's going to come up a lot, tons. A lot, and then never again. So that's a whole other story. We won't get into that, but I do find that interest, that aspect of it interesting, that there's this whole theme part. There's a part A and a part B to this theme. It's used a ton in this movie, and then it's not used in episode 9. Poor Rose's theme.
Decisions were made.
Decisions, yeah, exactly. So yeah. I don't want to read into it too much, but those are the facts. It is here, and then it's not. So I wonder if the forlorn part that you're hearing is because it falls at the end. Or maybe it, because I, now that you say it, I can sort of get it, but I'm not sure if I'm just, my perception is clouded because I also am associating it with her looking down at the medallion.
Yeah. And that may be it for me as well, is I'm associating the music with what's going on in the lens, which is her, you know, tears just welling out of her eyes.
Yeah, and that's
so you can't help but go feel this kind of sadness for her. But at the same time, you know, she's got this, like, she sees Finn and it's all about, he's a hero. So she's got this just eternal optimism in there somewhere. So I think, yeah, she's in the middle of a war. So I do think that her musical theme conveys that. I mean, at least to me, I think it conveys the hope that there are heroes in this world, but sacrifices must be made.
I think it's interesting how, in isolation, the theme might portray one thing, but then when paired with the visuals, it kind of mixes and matches to maybe come to a different, it's like a different recipe. You're combining two different things. Because when the theme shows up later, it's in many other contexts that are not necessarily forlorn. Like, it ends up being pretty heroic and very optimistic and, like, you know, I think of, like, the Fathiers later and just them really kicking ass and just, you know, this theme is blasting. But you can also play this theme and show a certain image. And that is sort of like the beauty of filmmaking, I guess, is where you can use all these different techniques and elements to kind of tug at slightly different heartstrings.
Oh, yeah. Now, because I'm not as familiar with her theme and all that, when she is talking to Finn, is that a different cue, or is it her theme retweaked for the speech?
Oh, good question.
Does that make sense?
I can't remember if we're still on the... We might have moved on. Let me see if I have it in my notes anywhere. But I will say that whatever's happening here is kind of diverging a little bit from the soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
So there is, I think, a bit of new, like, incidental music.
Mm.
I actually don't know exactly what you're referring to. Don't have that in my notes.
Before she pulls out the taser, sorry, I'm a visual person, so I have to close my eyes to see it. He's about to get into the escape pod. She kind of stops him. There's this music underneath as she's giving the I think it's a speech about heroes. Before she pulls out the taser and says, I've had to stun 3 people. Then the music changes. So there's this kind of, it's not a flute, but it sounds like a, some type of wind instrument.
Oh.
That is at the top of that, and it's very ethereal sounding. And then there's the switch when she gets serious and is like, you're not about to leave, are you? And then that builds up the tension. So there's, after the skulking, after her crying over the medallion, there's the scene in front of the pod. And there is definitely a musical change where, it goes from kind of hopeful, ethereal lights to it just like, it drops. I think it feels like it drops an octave or more as he scrambles to talk about music. So it goes from hopeful hero talk to you're not about to leave, and it's like turns on a dime, the music. But I wasn't sure if it was bringing over her theme or going with a different sound.
I see what you're saying. When it turns on a dime, does it go to like something ominous or?
It sounds like it's like a different cue. I wouldn't say ominous. I would just say... We're no longer in that, you know, idolization speech that she was kind of giving Finn.
Mm-hmm. In my memory, the music is like turned down in that spot. So I don't even know. See, I don't notice
this
everything.
This is what happens. It's like, well, I'm going to listen to this 5 minutes over and over again.
No, I'm like, see, because I could watch this endless times and still not even notice everything. What I do remember is the stun gun sound.
See if I can.
It's like the thing. Okay, here's the thing with Roses. I'll do a little bit on what I notice in Roses' theme. So it is very idealistic, and it is very reminiscent of something that I couldn't put my finger on when I was in the theaters. Or like I could put my finger on it, but I don't know if it was the accurate recall. Like it was very familiar when I heard it, and not familiar from Star Wars, familiar from something else. And it gave me an extremely strong reaction. It was like the one takeaway I had from this film was Rose's theme. And something about it felt, I don't even know how to say this. It just, I still don't really know how to completely place it. It's so idealistic that it's like almost too much for me.
So an almost uncanny valley experience?
I don't know about that, but it seems very like Rose is a good person.
Mm.
Rose is a hero.
Mm-hmm.
Rose is positive. It seems very like that to me. And so this is when I have to like, I don't know, have a conversation with myself and be like, okay, is that bad? Why might that like trigger something in my mind that makes me think about other stuff?
Huh.
What is it reminding me of in my childhood maybe, or, you know, like pieces that I grew up listening to and playing? Mm-hmm. Like it must be reminding me of another piece that I associate with idealism or something. I will say that it also shares a lot of it shares the same beginning as the Force melody, as the Force theme, but just with one note changed again, so I'll play. Okay. So let me play the forest theme first. So Rose. So it raises, like it does a major thing instead of a minor theme. So if I were to play the force theme, but with Rose's rhythm, it would be. Now I feel like I'm getting them confused, but that's what the force theme would be like in Rose's rhythm. And then Rose's theme. In the force rhythm is. I think I will have completely lost some people with that. And some people may have followed that. And a lot of people will probably just be like kind of confused because they sound similar like that.
Yeah, yes. I would have to sit down with that and process it, to be honest. Like, I get it, and if I saw the music in front of me, I'd go, okay, I can see what's happening. But yeah, they're very similar.
Yeah. Those are the collection of notes that Rose would use. And the forest is. So there's my one weird example for the episode. I plan to do like a deeper dive. I won't do this on this episode, but in a future episode, I am going to go more into Rose's. I'm going to go into talking about Rose's theme more. And yeah, I guess that's just a teaser. That makes no sense. So
it gets you thinking. I will say that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the force theme led into the resistance theme, and the force theme leads into Rose's theme. And now I'm like, well, how many other themes does the force theme go into?
Oh, many, actually.
Which I don't think I ever consciously connected it. I just, you hear that da, 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 da. And if you only hear that da, 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 and it completely goes somewhere else, you're still going to be like, I see what you did there.
Yes, it's like Mad Libs. You can like kind of fill in the end of it with something different. No, but the force theme, to use your words, goes into a lot of things. But I think what is happening is not necessarily that it goes into them, but a lot of themes, purposely or not purposely, are written such that they can overlap unobtrusively with the force theme. You know, I think about like if you're a DJ doing a mashup of something, you could mash the force theme up with some other things very convincingly and have it sound like it fits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What is your favorite musical theme in Star Wars?
Don't know if it's a theme per se, but one of my kind of... I mean, the movie's been out for, let's see, 744 years? Almost 44 years? No. Yeah, 77. Well, no, I'm talking about Star Wars in the whole.
Yeah.
So 1977, so math. Yeah. 44 years? The scene that still gives me the chills is when Vader and Luke are on the Death Star doing their battle.
Hmm.
The chorus coming in, and this is after... It's after Vader threatening to go after Leia. And everything just kind of swells, and I have yet to not get chills from that whole musical sequence.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like when people mention their favorite musical moments in Star Wars, and it's not necessarily a track name, but it's a specific moment with the picture connected to it, because it just shows how much the music plays into the story as a whole and the emotions that we feel, like the impact of the scene, basically.
Yeah, the minute music and visuals evoke emotion, that emotion is going to be connected inextricably in perpetuity ad nauseum.
Yeah.
It's like, I can get that swell of emotion every time I even think about it. There are a number of musical pieces that do that same in different films that do that same kind of thing. It's just, yeah, if music can attach to an emotion, you'll always remember that music. You'll always remember that visual. At least me.
No, I'm the same way. Yeah. When I think of my favorite musical moments in Star Wars, it's not like because I was listening to the soundtrack and track 6 stood out. It's more like, no, I remember when he lifted the X-Wing with the Force.
Mm-hmm.
And that music is playing in my head. It's connected with things happening often as well. So, okay. Before we end this, I have a lot. I have humor me a little bit. What was the casting process for Luke like, and how did you practice his voice?
I can answer the first one, the second part first. I watched the movie thousands and thousands of times over the years, or listened to it. It was one of those things I would have on the background, so I kind of knew Luke on a subconscious level. I also gravitated towards kind of performing the Joker, just kind of jokingly. So I'm already kind of in that vein of Mark Hamill stuff. The process was, when you're doing they actually cast it as a voice match. A voice match is when you want a dead-on copy, which usually voice matches are done for ADR, or automated dialogue replacement. They gave me a bunch of lines from the original trilogy, some reference files, some sound files of him performing them, and then I played them back, and it was just a matter of mimicry. It was,
That sounds so difficult, and also a much more precise process than I would have expected, because I can imagine, like, once you really get to know a voice, some part of imitating it, mimicking it, is natural just because you understand it. But then a lot of it, like the fine tweaking, would have to be like, oh no, I have to emphasize this aspect more, or I have to, like, the fine tuning part. What is that? What was that?
I think it was just latching on to kind of his cadence. Whenever I would need to get into the character,
what is his cadence?
It's weird. I just know when I, like, I've internalized it, so it's just something I kind of do when I want to get into something. I'll find a line, and for me at the time, it was when he's trying to save. At that point, he's trying to save Anakin, and Vader's like, "No, go save yourself." And the line that always kind of brought me back into it was, I'll not leave you here. I've got to save you.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And there's just something about that flow where it's, I don't know what it was, but it got me.
Deliver that same line with a different cadence so we can hear the difference between.
I'll not leave you here. I've got to save you. But yeah, if you want to match it, it's like, I'll not leave you here. I've got to save you.
Okay. Yeah. The differences that I'm spotting are the emphasis, it's like the rhythm of the sentence as a whole.
Yeah.
Is there's more emphasis on save and drawing out the A sound.
And that's just, again, that's me kind of copying his performance.
Right, exactly.
That, yeah.
So the cadence is like how this, how the line as a whole kind of just lays out. Like if you have like a yard of fabric and you're kind of just like, I don't know where that analogy came from. That was a really weird place to go.
And you're, if you like, just throw it wherever the wrinkles happen,
yes,
and the valleys and hills. The, yeah.
That's what I was getting at. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No. Yeah. I've had to. Yes. I've dealt with fabric in my days. But again, that's it's more of a performance choice. I mean, it could be, you know, you're coming with me. I'll not leave you here. I'm gonna save you. All of a sudden, I'm going through puberty again.
So not I'm going to save you. Diction's part of it.
Diction's part of it. It's, but there's an urgency to his voice. I'm just looking over. Like, I pulled up the email from in the before time. There were seven lines. There were seven lines that they had me match.
Oh, I'm so curious. What seven lines did they think were the most important? Oh, you probably can't share them all, but just like a couple.
I mean, let's see. And we'll see if the listeners know, be able to spot. Here's a quiz for you. Which films were they from? Boy, it's lucky you had these compartments. I know there is good in you. The Emperor hasn't driven it from you fully. Let's see. What good would it do? What good would it do if he gets himself killed?
Oh, the way you said "killed," yeah, I got it. Okay.
But that, yeah, and then it goes to just thanks, 3PO.
Oh, so they're getting
that's it. I had to match a thanks, 3PO. So yeah, they want to see. They want to make sure that you
casual,
get the highs and lows.
Emotional,
yeah.
Talking about compartments.
Mm-hmm. And then once you've mastered all of that, do it while screaming. For
that's
this particular
part,
game.
That's the part that I'm like, why do they even want all the subtle stuff? You're going to be screaming anyway, but...
Because you want... Honestly, you don't want the fans to be pulled out of it. Like you were saying with Rose's theme, where it's like there's something there that my brain is going, okay, what is it about this theme? If you want to get as close to it as possible so that people aren't pulled out of the game. So they're not... They don't hear Luke, and it's all of a sudden, you know, it's that Wilhelm scream moment where you're like, oh, what was that? Or, oh, hey, the Wilhelm scream.
Gotcha.
So you want to be in the ballpark. You want to be 90-95% there if you can't be 100% there, so that there is wiggle room.
Mm-hmm.
And then hope that the performance will carry over. It was just one of those interesting struggles is, you know, any performance when you're screaming loses a little subtlety,
absolutely.
But that's your job as an actor to maintain that character.
Yeah, absolutely. I have trouble screaming in life. I think it with something like Rose's theme or with like a new character, I think the momentary, taking one out of the moment or kind of causing the audience's gears to turn a little bit. I think that's a fine thing when it's a new character. But mm-hmm. if you're trying to seamlessly integrate into an already established character, it's like a completely different ballpark where you don't want the seams in that fabric. Oh, well, Anthony, it was very fun talking to you. If people at home are curious about like what the limits and possibilities in their own voices are or anyone else's, like how can they experiment on their own voice at home?
Very carefully.
Okay.
We live especially the time we're in now, just about everyone's got a mic of some kind. Yeah, I will say don't go into a quiet room and just start screaming at the top of your lungs. You will do damage.
But I mean, like, even me sitting here with you right now, what is, like, a sort of, like, exercise or just, like, thing that someone can think about to try to be like, oh, I can just explore a different texture of my voice. Like, I can understand how to produce a different kind of sound just for fun.
I would say just for fun, it's that placement. It's... when I said
tongue
placement? Well, not tongue placement, but just general vocal placement. If you can, if like, I'll go from nose to throat and back to nose. That, so you're
really just kind of doing this kind of thing, and then you're talking like this, and then you're basically going right up here into your head voice, and then you're coming back down.
And if you can sustain any one of those areas for a long time, you can start, hey, what's this guy going to do? And it's not straining my voice at all to talk down here, but what type of characters are going to come out of here? Am I going to be able to do something for, you know, a long period of time?
And then the same thing, if I'm doing something like this, what type of guy is going to be talking like this? What type of character?
And that's just going from place to place. And you can find a lot in that range. And that works the muscle to get you to where you can start kind of developing characters and working, like, if you want to be a voice actor, especially in animation, you want to have that facility to be able to do that, to go from here to here without hurting yourself, and to be able to do it for, you know, 4 hours.
Right.
Does that answer your question?
Sort of. I mean, it was,
but
like,
I think,
a very,
I think that's a good exercise, like a very, is, yeah, it's go from a chest
voice to a head
voice.
I'm trying to map these out to Star Wars characters. So, like, where would Darth Vader's voice be? Like,
oh, well, I mean, Darth Vader's is definitely a very chest voice. He's James Earl Jones.
So you would feel the rumbling in your chest.
So you would feel the rumbling from the chest. Whereas, if you want to say, Utini, it's going to be a head voice. It's going to be a head, whereas Yoda, I mean, Frank Oz has that natural kind of throaty placement. So it's difficult for me to do, but Yoda's is Frank Oz talks like this. That's just where he talks. So Yoda is that.
It is Yoda. He's this.
Oh my gosh. There's such a wide variety in voices. In...
Yeah. But those are three different places. The Jawas are definitely a head placement that.
Utini!
Yoda is right, kind of right here. And then Darth Vader is right here.
You're pointing to your throat there.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. For those listening, I'm going head voice, throat voice for Yoda, and then chest voice for Darth Vader.
What about Obi-Wan?
Let's see. Where is Obi-Wan? So he's more right here. I'm not. I haven't practiced Obi-Wan Kenobi, but he's a nasal, but he's older, so it's a back of the throat. I would say Obi-Wan Kenobi is a nasal placement, and then he rose, but he's coming from an articulate place, so it's sort of the back of the throat, back of the tongue type of thing.
Huh. Yeah, okay. Wow, I feel like I'm more equipped to notice the different placements of voices when I go through the rest of this movie and Star Wars in general. I mean, honestly, there's such a wide variety that it's, you hear a character and you're like, I know exactly who that is.
Yeah. I mean, you start going, all right, like how, just, I think just like you would do with music, you have to break it down. Okay. How is it made? What are the notes? What is the placement? I had mentioned in communication about your first episode where the resonance that blew my mind when a certain key played on a certain instrument can make that entire instrument vibrate.
Okay. Yeah. Anthony's referring to when we were playing on the cello and violin, we were playing like D's and G's, and those notes on string instruments naturally like cause a ton of vibrations in the instrument, which makes those keys very resonant for those instruments, resonant in like the physical way.
Yeah. And at one of those kind of,
and
oh,
vocal,
that gave
and
me chills moments.
And there's moments like that in the voice, I know too, because sometimes if I'm like singing a certain note, like I feel it really buzzing in the roof of my mouth in a certain place. Yeah.
Yeah, there are definitely certain notes that I'll hear or reproduce. And yeah, it causes your head becomes a resonance chamber. And it's like, whoa. But that's it. A lot of it is, it's like, all right, how is this person making the sounds that they are making? Where is their placement? Once you can kind of figure out the placement, you work with that, and then you start looking at their cadence and other little minutiae, and then you can kind of replicate it. But a lot of it is also genetics. Are you naturally in the ballpark of a certain character?
Right. Yeah. At baseline, what type of voice is your most natural, like, baseline?
I mean, that's why I would say for me, my baseline is Mark Hamill.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in a couple of years, I'll drop into a nice Harrison Ford, but yeah, I don't have that yet.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, because Harrison Ford.
He has a lot of resonance.
He's a lot of resonance, and he's got a hero voice.
A hero voice.
He's got a hero voice.
Interesting. He's like not even the a main hero, but he really does. Yeah. I totally know. I mean, he's Indiana Jones. He's Han Solo. Yeah. Wow. What am I?
I mean, let's see. I would say you're...
Where in the ballpark?
Just hearing your voice. I'm trying to because you have a lot of bright characteristics. I would say you're kind of upper back of the tongue, and then I'd say mid to nasal placement.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that is like, okay. I know it's not Mark Hamill.
But yeah, everyone has their own characteristic. Everyone has their own musicality and their own voice. And I'll leave you with this, like, the way I get into accents is the exact same way. It's find out the placement of a thing, and the rest kind of follows.
Yeah, that's very true. Not just with accents, but speaking in different languages. You take on a different sort of intonation and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And wow. Yeah, how and where they pronounce their words with their characters or language or anything, for me at least, drives their sound.
Do you think it drives Finn's sound? Because John Boyega has not an American accent.
Oh, I know, yeah. I'd say he's probably messed with, like, for his American, like, it's weird, because British, I mean, when people talk about American, or, like, when British people talk about American accents, I've heard them reference the adenoids, which I wouldn't even be able to, but it's like, that's the one phrase that always is like, oh yeah, Americans are very adenoidal. I'm like, what does that even mean? And I just may have been watching a very select group of British people. But he definitely would have had to probably change it, because I know if I'm going to, like I did for Obi-Wan Kenobi, it was, whenever I'm going British, it's going to be something more like this. So it's more head, for me, it's more head placement type of thing. So I kind of actually feel it in my temples for some reason. But if I want to roll it back to the American, it's
adenoidal.
It's adenoidal. but it's rolling it back into my throat. It's the back of the mouth type placement.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Well, thank you for coming on the show, Anthony. where can people find you online?
You can find me online at Twitter. My handle is Anthony Hansen. That's Hansen. I am on Instagram, although I'm not too active on Instagram. I'm trying to get better, at Anthony Hansen VO.
Ooh, that sounds like voiceover.
Well, yes. and I'm not on the talk of ticks.
What?
TikTok.
Oh, okay. Okay. I see what you did there.
Yeah, it's true.
Wow. Well, okay, so that's all we have for this episode. What are your favorite sound-related moments in The Last Jedi? And do you have any questions or inklings that you want to share with me and have me investigate? Definitely send me an email at podcast@starwarsmusicminute.com or tweet at me, send me a message anywhere. Or I also have a link in the show notes to submit an anonymous question if you so prefer. Gotten a lot of great ones, really great ones. The questions are very insightful, and I'll say that most of the questions so far have come from people who have said, I don't really know what I'm talking about, and I don't really know how to describe this musically, but something here is causing me to sniff it out. Like, I'm on the hunt. Something is happening here. Love that. Love those questions. I can help you elucidate those answers. So next week, we'll be back discussing minutes 41 through 45 of The Last Jedi. Thank you for listening. And, yeah, see you next week. Star Wars Music Minute.